That's nasty. What would people think if they saw her reading? The thought chased all the air out of my lungs. I jumped up, my chair falling behind me. Michael's head cocked back. Claudia, what's up? I couldn't speak. Couldn't spit the words out fast enough. They were all jumbled and flipped in the wrong direction. Instead, I ran to the front of the library, relieved to see Ms. Paul. Miss Paul! I yelped, slamming into her desk. Hey, sweetie, she said, her voice a soothing hush, as she scanned a pile of returned books. Miss Paul, I brought back Monday's book, I said, sliding it across the desk, my heart pounding. Miss Paul's eyes widened. Oh. Oh, my. Well, thank you, Claudia. No problem. She stared at the book, as if I had placed a dead rat at her feet, unsure of what to do with it. So, Miss Paul, I got a question for you. I started. Is there a way to see all the books a person ever borrowed from the library? Miss Paul swallowed and scanned the book with a nervous smile. No, sweetie, that's just an urban legend. Oh, okay, I muttered. That's funny. Monday once asked me the very same thing. She sighed, placing the book in the bin. Only place you can keep a record is when you take books out online, or if you lost any. I took a deep, calming breath. Anyway, I can see if Monday took any books out? Online? What for? I gave her a shy smile, with a shrug. I just want to read the same book she has. She read so much during the summer when I wasn't around. I want to catch up. You know, we always got to do the same things. She lets out an uneasy laugh. Oh, well, that's private information, Claudia. Please, Ms. Paul, Michael said behind me. She just wants to take a quick look. I think it would really help, since she's been missing her. We won't tell anybody. Miss Paul pursed her lips. She clicked her keyboard with a huff. I'm sorry. It's against policy. She stood up, patting her hair down. Now, I'm going to get a cup of coffee. Michael, I think there's something wrong with my computer. Do you mind taking a look? I'll be back in 5 minutes. With a curt nod, she headed for the staff lounge. I spun around to Michael, my mouth hanging open. He smirked. Dang, I thought stuff like that only happened in the movies. Hurry up, I laughed. Michael hopped behind the desk, sitting in Ms. Paul's chair, and I peered over his shoulder at the screen. Damn, she took out that flowers book 5 times, he mumbled, scrolling down a long list of books. Books I've never read. Books I knew nothing about. Books that would take me forever to read. Any of these books you recognize? Some of them, yeah, he said, concentrating as he scanned. A lot of them are the same kind of books. Books that deal with, like, child abuse stuff. My stomach looped and tied itself tight. I stared down at the list, using my index finger to read the title slowly. Flowers in the Attic, Perks of Being a Wallflower, Sharp Objects, Push. This is gonna sound crazy, he said slowly, seeming unsure. But I think she was saying what was happening to her without actually saying it. Like she was trying to send a hint, leave clues, breadcrumbs, I exclaimed, stabbing the screen. These are breadcrumbs. She thinks the government is watching her through her books. Michael rubbed his chin. No way. No fucking way, he mumbled. If these are breadcrumbs, then they would lead back to her. Michael turned to me in shock. Claudia. The buzzing appeared out of nowhere, like the freezer had grown legs, walked out and sat right behind me. There's no attic in Monday's house, I croaked out. Yes, but it doesn't mean she wasn't kept somewhere else. Claudia, don't you remember? Anything? Her sister Tuesday. She mentioned Monday was hiding in a closet. And there was a closet right by the bathroom. She had been there all along. I sprinted around the desk, grabbing my coat from the table and heading for the door. Where are you going? Michael barked, grabbing me by the elbow. I have to go back, I yelled, pulling away from him. Back? Nah, you can't go over there. Let's just call the police and tell them you've been holding on to this book. Police ain't gonna do nothing. And how am I going to explain the breadcrumbs she left without getting Miss Paul in trouble? You gotta talk to your parents. I can't. Ma and Daddy don't want to hear nothing else about Monday. Michael rubbed his hands against the front of his jeans. Well, maybe we should talk to Pastor Duncan. Tell him what you found. What's Pastor gonna do? He doesn't even know Monday. Other than April, I don't know anyone else who had stepped foot in her house and would know where to look. But there had to be someone who'd be willing to take on Mrs. Charles. Someone big and strong who could. Her dad. I have to tell her dad.
Her dad?
Claudia. Police said the only other person that could put in a missing persons report is her dad. If he does that, then they can look for her. He works at some place called the Maryland House. You know where that's at? Michael crossed his arms nervously. It's up on 95, right past Baltimore. But Claudia, I need to find him. Tell him about the breadcrumbs and stuff. Nah, I don't think that's a good idea. He's the only person that's gonna take this seriously. Michael shook his head. Man, I don't know. He didn't know, but I had already made my mind up. Listen, I'm gonna find my way to him, with or without you. He sighed, rubbing his head. Yeah, I know. But I ain't gonna let you just go alone. Hold up. He dug into his pocket for his phone and began texting furiously. About 10 minutes later, he smiled. Bet. My cousin said he can drive us there on Thursday, after school. He's visiting his girl in Delaware. But then we gotta get back on our own. How are we gonna do that? He shrugged nonchalantly. We'll just ask Mr. Charles to take us home. Heavy sheets of rain blanketed Michael's cousin's truck as we unloaded in front of the Maryland House, a busy pit stop surrounded by north and southbound highways and thick woods. The temperature had fooled me into believing spring was creeping around the corner. Aye, y'all be safe, his cousin said, before rolling up his window and taking off. For the hour and 20-minute ride, he didn't ask what we were up to and didn't seem to care how we planned on making it back home. Okay, we here, Michael said, holding the umbrella. Now what? Daddy said something about him working the pumps, I said, pointing to the Exxon station at the far end of the lot. Let's check it out. With the Easter holiday approaching that weekend, lines of cars crawled toward the gas pumps. We weaved through the cars, splashing through puddles, my sneakers already soaked from the short walk. We stopped to stand on the curb next to the attendant booth. Okay, which one is he? I blinked. I'm not sure. Michael frowned. You mean you don't remember what he looks like? Just as I started to defend myself, one of the attendants, an older white man with curly white blonde hair, waved us on. Hey, kids! He shouted over the loud rain. Y'all can't stand here! Quickly, I stepped up to use my best grown-up voice, taking a page out of Michael's How to Talk to Strangers playbook. Good afternoon, sir. Is Tip here? He frowned. Tip? Who's Tip? Dang, did we come all this way for nothing? Think they're talking about Tommy, another man said, opening the gas valve on the car next to us. That's his nickname. The older man laughed. Oh, right, Tommy. Yeah, who wants to know? I licked my lips. I'm his daughter, Monday. He stopped laughing and stared, like he'd seen a ghost. Oh, I'm sorry. He doesn't get in until 6. I checked my watch. It was only 4. Behind me, Michael rubbed his hands together as if trying to start a fire and shrugged. We'll wait inside then. Y'all can cut through the store over there to get inside. Thanks, Michael said, a hand on my lower back as he pushed me toward the gas station mini-mart attached to the main building. Reminded me of the first floor of Pentagon City Mall, frantic and busy. People zigzagged in front of us, rushing into bathrooms. Michael grabbed my arm, saving me from a speeding stroller, and pointed ahead at the Phillips seafood counter. Let's eat. I'm starving. We stood on a line as long as the ones at Six Flags and the massive food court for almost 30 minutes, ordering 2 crab cake sandwiches and fries with 2 medium cherry Cokes. Michael paid, refusing to take my money. So what you tell your mom you were doing, so you can come? Michael asked, as he carried our tray, scanning the room for an empty seat. Told her I signed up for an extra rehearsal for my solo with Megan. That should give me a couple of hours. He chuckled. Man, she'll kill you and me if she ever finds out the truth. Definitely crossing several dangerous lines. Approaching an adult like I'm grown. Involving myself in family business with folks that ain't my real family. Driving out of D.C. with a boy. If Ma had a clue, she'd whoop my ass. But finding Monday outweighed all the risk. How could I ever even consider giving up on her? She'd never give up on me. We sat at a booth in the back near the windows, watching the rain pour down. So what are you gonna say when you see him? He asked, taking a bite of his sandwich. There were so many things to say, I barely knew where to begin. I don't know. Well, I see you thought all of this through. I'm winging it. Good thing you brought some muscle with you, he said, cracking his knuckles and fake flexing. You know, as some insurance. Oh, yeah. You sure figured me out, I snickered, flinging a fry at him. He caught it in his mouth, shooting his arms up like I made a field goal. You know, I've always wanted to do this.
Do what?
I laughed. He smirked, playing with a waffle fry before popping it into his mouth. Take a girl to Phillips. It felt as if the rain had stopped, and nothing but sunshine beamed down on us. Only us. The place cleared out, and we were the only ones left in the entire world.
Really?
Yeah. Well, not this Phillips. Ever been? It's way nice inside. My dad used to take my mom. Now all he talks about is how there's no good seafood in Dubai. He sighed, taking a sip of his soda, gazing off. Did you ask if you could stay with your grandma yet?
Yeah.
He huffed. And they seem cool with it. But it's just gonna suck without them. I'll miss my mom, but I'm really going to miss my dad. I'm sorry. He nodded with a shrug. Anyway, so what's up with this recital I hear all you girls talking about? I laughed. What about it? Don't you got a solo or something? My back tensed, thinking of Miss Manis's last comments.
Yeah.
Dang, don't sound so excited about it. He chuckled. The way Megan be talking at school, that's a big deal. I've seen you dance at church and at that party. What do you gotta worry about? You can move. I took a sip of my cherry Coke. Well, I was excited. But my teacher picked this slow song. He shrugged. So what's the problem?
Problem is, I wanted to show up with some of the dances I made up with Monday. Slow songs ain't my thing.
Oh. So, that's why you want to find her?
No.
Not just that, I said, my stomach clenching. She's in trouble. I don't know how to explain it, but I can just feel it.
He stared at me for a moment, before nodding, wiping his mouth with a balled-up napkin. For the first time, it didn't feel like a lie. I wasn't looking for her because I needed her. I was looking for her because she needed me. She needed my help. "You watch football?" Michael asked, stealing a pickle off my plate. "With Daddy, yeah. Ever see them do those instant replays?" I frowned. "Of course. Why?" "Well, I think sometimes when something is going real fast, it can look real beautiful in slow motion. So, maybe you can do that. Do your same moves, but slow motion." I shook my head. "It don't work like that." He motioned to the empty space next to our table with a smirk. "Try it." "What? Right now? In front of all of these people? You've luncheon. So you can perform on stage in front of hundreds of people and in front of our whole congregation, yet you can't perform in front of a bunch of tourists?" He cackled. "Come on, girl. I dare you." Monday would do it, a voice inside me whispered. She never backed down from a dare. I tilted my chin up. "Fine," I sighed, wiping my hands clean. "This is crazy." He leaned back in his chair, with his soda and a satisfied grin. "Won't be calling it crazy when it works." I stood up, deciding to try the first few steps of our heartbeat routine. 2 quick pumps, dip, and a turn. I glanced back at Michael, nodding. "Okay. So what happens when you slow it down? Like, real slow." Rolling my neck, I closed my eyes to picture the steps. What would they look like slow? What if my arms weren't so sharp, but more graceful? Instead of a dip and turn, what if I pirouetted? Relaxing my muscles, I began breathing through the motions, letting my arms delicately unfold the air around me, rather than slicing through it. At the last second, I thought of Megan, then of dance ministry at church, the way we ended our performance, with a low bow, arms raised to the sky. Without a mirror, I had no idea what I looked like, but the motions felt good. Michael clapped and cheered, and so did everybody around us. "Oh my God," I squealed, covering my face with my hands. "I can't believe I did that." Michael pulled me into a hug. "Told you it would work." For the next hour, we talked through a bunch of my dances before taking our time walking back to the mini mart. We stood in the snack aisle, staring at the huge windows and watching the rain pummel the ground. "Aye, it's 5 to 6, Michael said, rubbing his hands together. "He should be here any minute now. Should we wait outside? And get soaked? Nah. We could see everything from in here straight." He glanced over his shoulder before walking off. "Be right back." Night began to fall, the sky blackening. The wind kicked up as lightning struck through the trees while puddles turned into oceans. What if he doesn't come? Michael returned with 2 steaming styrofoam cups of hot chocolate. "Good work today, champ," he said, passing me a cup. "I asked cuz up front if they made these with milk, and he gonna say, 'What you think this is, Starbucks?'" "Thank you," I giggled, blowing off the rising steam. "How much sugar you put in this?" "None. Coach says if I don't cut it out, I'm gonna end up with diabetes. I'm cutting sugar out of everything." I laughed. "You talk about your coach a lot." "Yeah, he's cool." He slurped at his cup. "So, like, I know you're gonna be sad without your dad being here and stuff. But it sounds like you have a bunch of dads here." His smile dimmed. "What do you mean?" "I mean, you got your coach, Pastor Duncan. Hell, even my daddy are all here for you. Some kids don't even have that." His eyes shifted to his sneakers. "It just ain't the same." My dad, he's like my best friend. I knew all about missing your best friend and how substitutions didn't fill the gaps left by their absence. I had fun working with Michael on my dance moves and painting nails at Megan's house, but it didn't feel the same. Thanks, though, he muttered, his eyes lifting to mine with a deep breath. Listen, about that party. I quickly waved him off. Nah, forget about it. Like you said, we were both drunk and things got out of hand, that's all. He sighed. I wasn't drunk. The hot chocolate turned cold in my hand. What? He turned, reaching to slip his fingers between mine, pulling me closer. I said, I wasn't drunk. The rain stopped again. Lost in each other's gaze, he inched closer, stepping into my bubble, where it was warm and safe, the sun hot on my neck. He's going to kiss me, I thought. Right here, right now. And this time, I'm not drunk. This time I won't rush. But as I tilted my head up, I glanced through the window at a rusty tan Grand Marquis pulling up to a garage just right of the station. A man jumped out, wearing a navy workman's jumpsuit and brown boots. I recognized his eyes, his high cheekbones, his deep scowl. Monday stole so much of her looks from him. Look, I whispered, nodding over Michael's shoulder. There he is. Michael flipped around, watching Tip Charles lock up his car. I sensed Michael sizing him up, his shoulders tensing. Tip had about an inch over him in height, but in weight, they could be equal. Tip Charles ran through the rain up to the blonde man, giving him a head nod as he slipped on some thick workman's gloves. Blonde man said a few words to him, then pointed over to the mini-mart. Tip Charles's face went blank before he pivoted, his back now facing us. They exchanged some tense words, and blonde man threw his hands up. Michael and I shared a look. This wasn't going well. Without even glancing in our direction, Tip Charles ran back toward the garage, pulling a hood over his face as if to cloak himself. He jumped in his car and slammed the door. Wait, what's he doing? Michael mumbled, slowly setting his hot chocolate on the window ledge. The tickling in my stomach turned sharp. Tip Charles fumbled with his keys like someone running away from the killer in a horror movie, his face pale, eyes terrified. Is he leaving? Michael barked and took off running toward the door. Michael! I screamed, chasing him. Tip Charles threw the car in reverse and slammed on the gas by the time he made it outside. Fucking pussy! Michael screamed as the car sped out of sight. Michael! I yelled, standing in the rain, my heart racing. What? I sighed, my breath puffing in front of me. How are we going to get home? Shouldn't we call our parents? I asked as we climbed out of a cab at the Baltimore Amtrak station, well past 8 o'clock. According to my lie, I should have been home by now. And get yelled at for an hour and change on the drive back home? Nah, I'd rather get to D.C. first and let them kill us there. If it weren't for the emergency credit card Michael's dad had given him, we would have been stranded in the middle of the highway, so I didn't argue. Bad enough, he was about to be in as much trouble as I was. Our soggy sneakers squeaked against the marble floor inside the busy station. I kept close to Michael, wanting desperately to hold his hand, just to erase the nervousness eating at my stomach in an unfamiliar city. I can't believe he just dipped like that, Michael said, for what might have been the 1,000th time since we left the Maryland house. Who does that? After everything that's happened, he ran like we were the police. I didn't know what to say anymore. The shock of it hadn't worn off yet. The moment set on a loop, burning through all other thoughts. The loudspeaker blared announcements As we passed a couple of circular wooden benches, newsstands, and gold ticket counters, TVs set on the local news hooked on every other column. We stood gazing up at the huge train information board hanging from the ceiling, clicking with departure times and gate numbers. "Next train to D.C. leaves in 10 minutes, I said, reading the board, as a few people rushed past, sprinting to their gates. "Leaves from gate 3. Wait over there by the track, and I'll get us tickets." I nodded as he ran off, taking in the hectic surroundings. "Baltimore," I mumbled to myself. The search for Monday had taken me to a whole other city, and I still had nothing to show for it. Where do I go from here? Who else could I tell? I couldn't even think of a next step. Since I couldn't shake the look on Tip Charles's face, just at the mention of his daughter, why would he run? "Authorities need your help identifying the body of a young teenage girl found in Leakin Park." The words "body" and "girl" grabbed hold of me. I looked up at the TV on the column, focusing on the newscaster's cherry red lipstick, footage of the crime scene, police taping off a section of a park, and the snow-covered ground from the month before zipped across the screen. "No missing persons report matches the young victim's description. Medical reports are trying to determine how long the body has been. The victim appears to be between 14 and 16 years in age." Before, it was all blank. Just a plain sheet of paper with empty, meaningless shapes. Only after the shapes are colored in, does a picture really appear. "Monday," I gasped, my stomach dropping, the world darkening. Michael jogged back with 2 tickets. "Okay, we got 5 minutes, let's go." "Hey, what's wrong?" The picture began to sharpen and cut through me. Everything clicked. I thought her being missing was the worst thing that could have happened to us. How could I have been so blind? "She's dead," I said, staring at the TV. Michael flinched. "What?" "Monday. She's dead." Michael followed my gaze, reading the lower headline on the screen. He glanced down at me, then back at the TV, his face alarmed but controlled. "Nah, that ain't her," he said, shaking his head. My ears rang, a shrilling sound that drowned out everything around me. A buzz. Michael bent to my eyesight, blocked the TV, and calmly pressed a hand on my thigh. "Claudia, it ain't her," he said softly. "I promise you it ain't." "Her dad lives in Baltimore," I mumbled. "They find lots of folks in that park, but I swear to you, that ain't her." I shook my head. "Did you see the look on his face? You said it yourself. He ran like we were the police." Hysteria began to set in, tears threatening to fall. "What if her mom wasn't lying? What if she really did take her to her dad's house? What if he lied to my dad about seeing her?" Michael took a deep breath, his face crumbling. "Claudia, you really don't remember anything? Anything at all? Huh? What do you mean?" Michael jumped like a spider bit his ass and snatched his phone out of his back pocket. "Damn," he mumbled, scrolling through new text. "It's the church phone tree. Your mom is looking for you." "Shit," I muttered. "But we can't leave now. We have to go to the police on this. They found her in the woods, and they can't identify her because nobody knows she's missing." Michael sighed with a sadness in his eyes I'd never seen before. "Claudia, I'm sorry. I thought, I don't know, but I think it's time we called your mom." The before. The next morning, I woke up sluggish and weak. By the time I dressed for school, the chills and dry mouth swept in, followed by an aching head. I fumbled downstairs, my knees still a thick plum, to find Ma in the kitchen, sipping coffee and staring off at nothing. Ma? Waking up, she glanced at me, almost confused.
Oh, morning, sweet pea,
she said, her voice raspy. I noticed her jeans and sweater.
You're not going to work today?
She frowned. Took today off.
Your interview at Banneker, remember?
The interview. Scheduled for April 1st. I forgot all about it. And it's Good Friday. Gotta get ready for the fish fry this evening. She took another sip, setting her mug down softly. Your father is on his way home. We're gonna go over to Patty's to check on Monday. I want you to stay here. She didn't say it, but the lingering thought pressed through. Just in case. She nodded. Just in case. Shivers crept up my arms. I didn't want Ma near Mrs. Charles or that house. What if she ended up missing too? Everything is going to be fine, she insisted. We'll straighten this all out, okay? I nodded, my body swaying. She stood, wrapping her arms around me for one of her tight hugs, but she quickly pulled back, studying my face. She pressed the back of her hand to my cheek, snatching it back, as if she touched a hot pan.
Claudia, you're burning up!
The thermometer read 101.
Probably because you were running around at all hours of the damn night,
she fussed, tucking me back in bed.
Probably caught pneumonia or something.
I have to go to the store. Your father done used up all the dang Tylenol.
You gonna be all right for a little while?
I nodded.
Okay, good. I'll make some soup for lunch.
Not long after Ma left, in the distance, I could hear the swarm of sirens, like an out-of-sync band, growing louder. Sirens were normal in Southeast, but their urgency, and so many of them, my eyes popped open. I rolled myself out of bed, limping to gaze out the window, staring up at a bright blue sky with choppers hovering low. I glanced back at the library, home of all the books Monday had read. For English reading assignments, I'd skipped some chapters to keep up with her. Monday would laugh and say it's the same as fast-forwarding a movie to the ending. The ending. I raced over to my bed and dove under, grabbing Monday's journal, skipping to the last page. I don't know why I didn't think of this before. Start from the end and work my way back. I guess because you always start a book from the beginning. Just like this story, you gotta know a person's past to understand their present. But to find Monday fast, I needed to know her last move. On the last page, she wrote two sloppy lines. Tomorrow Claudia leaves for the summer. When she's gone, I'm telling her mom what happened. Maybe I can live with her until she gets back. Somewhere in the quiet of that moment, dread crawled in before the phone rang.
Claudia, you all right?
Ma asked, Daddy's album playing in the background.
Yes.
Okay, I'm on my way back now. There's just a bunch of traffic. I think something's happening over at Edboro. They're blocking off all the cross streets. A stray cop car came hurling down our block, swerving past a trash can that blew into the middle of the street, sirens blaring. I only caught a quick glimpse of the driver, his face hardened. If I had any color left from my sickness, it vanished once he made a left around the library, then up Good Hope Road, following the others turning left on Martin Luther King, heading toward Edboro. I don't remember the last words I said to Ma. I don't remember slipping into my furry boots or pulling my coat over my pajamas. I don't even remember running out of the house, leaving the door wide open. All I remember is pedaling down the road, panting like a dying animal. I had to see for myself. The weather had broken overnight, leaving it warmer than it had been in weeks. Just like D.C., Ma would say. Winter one day, summer the next. Sweat dripped down into my eyes, and my socks were soaked, but panic kept me moving. Police cars blocked the main entrance of Edboro. Struggling with every breath, I cut through the grass path around the back of the basketball courts to Monday's side of the complex, hoping the traffic would clear. But the barriers thickened, as well as a crowd that created a semicircle right outside her house. I dropped my bike by the curb, wobbling up the path to join the onlookers. Yellow police tape roped around the old trees, casting shadows over the parked police cars and ambulances. The rumbling crowd grew louder. Old ladies in their house dresses, sweats, and thin coats. Men with their oversized sweatshirts, jeans. Women holding their babies, trying to tame their wild toddlers. A policeman stumbled out of the house, his white face tinted green. He hacked and heaved, covering that same crack I tripped over with pink vomit. A hush came over the crowd. The police and medics moved at a snail's pace. No urgency, meaning whatever was done, was done. There was no one left to save. A photographer appeared, taking pictures of the crowd. Click, click, click. News crews elbowed through as a neighbor started whispering. What happened in there? They saying they found some children dead inside. Dead? Get out. The police tape that held us back flapped in the breeze with a smack. My heart cracked, my throat clenching so tight I could barely breathe. Click, click, click. Hey, ain't that Patty's house? Oh my Lord, she got four babies. I saw them take away April. Well, which one they find dead? Don't know yet. They saying they found two kids in the freezer. The freezer? What'd you say? Lord, who they find in the freezer? My legs, my arms, my hands. Everything went numb. The voices drowned out. Mouths still moving but silent. I could hear nothing but my heart racing and the buzz of the freezer. Buzz. The world spun, slow at first, but then real fast, like the way Monday and I would spin each other, round and round, fits of giggles, until we'd fallen into the grass and look up at the sky. Buzz. I coughed up a breath, looking at the clouds. Only one hovered nearby. A small puff of gray, as if forgotten by a passing storm, left for dead. My eyes rolled back, knees shaking. I staggered, bumping into something hard and solid. Daddy. He lifted me up, cupping a hand around my head. I clutched his neck, gripping his leafy green jacket, my whole body shaking. Shh. It's okay, sweet pea. Daddy's got you. Just close your eyes. It's all right. He backed out of the crowd and carried me all the way home. The after. Oh, thank God! As soon as we walked in, Ma gathered me into a tight hug, burying her nose in my hair. Y'all had me so worried. I wiggled free of her grasp as Michael closed the door behind us. Ma, we don't have time for this. We have to go to the police. Ma frowned, rubbing my arms. The police? Why? It's my fault, Mrs. Coleman. Michael mumbled, his head low. I thought if she saw him, it would help her remember. Ma sighed. It's all right, Michael. I know you were just trying to help. Tip called here not too long ago. See? I said to Michael. I told you! Running like we were the police, because he knew he was up to no good. He called trying to stop us. Michael sighed, stuffing his hands in his pockets. Ma's eyes toggled between us. Sweet pea. Ma, you have to listen to me. Monday. She's not at her aunt's house. She's not at her mom's or her dad's. They found a girl's body in the woods in Baltimore, near where her dad lives. And I think it's Monday. I know it sounds crazy, but I talked to Miss Orman. Monday never had the flu. CFSA took her. Ma's eyes filled with tears. her lip trembling. Oh, sweetie, I thought you were getting better.
What? No, I am better. I've been going to Ms. Walker's and TLC. That ain't got nothing to do with this.
I looked to Michael for backup, but he just stood there, staring at the floor.
The breadcrumbs, I continued. Monday took out books from the library about kids being abused. She was trying to tell the government what was going on, but the government doesn't look at the books you take out after all. Her mom lied about that.
Ma nodded with a sniff. Okay. How about you sit down and...
Ma, you're not listening! I'm trying to tell you Monday's missing! Why won't anyone listen? Why won't anyone believe me?
Ma froze, glancing at Michael. Tears now falling.
You're right, Claudia, Ma whispered. You were right all along. We should have believed you the first time you brought it up.
First time, I thought. What is she talking about?
Honey, listen to me. Monday is gone. She's been gone almost 2 years now.
What do you mean?
I turned to Michael.
What's she talking about?
Michael shook his head.
I'm sorry, Claudia.
Sorry? For what?
Claudia,
Monday died 2 years ago,
Ma said gently, grabbing my wrist to keep me steady.
Her and August were.
The bursting of our bubble could be heard around the world.
No,
I gasped, trying to back away from her.
Yes, sweet pea,
she said, gripping me tighter.
And I'm so sorry you keep having these episodes where you forget what happened.
2 years.
2 years? But that would mean...
Wait, how old am I?
Ma took a deep breath.
You're 16.
That's impossible. I just turned 14,
I muttered.
You said I can have a party. I'm applying for schools.
Yes. Yes, you're applying for high school. Again. We took you out of school. Do you remember your last day? Do you remember what happened?
I tried to think back. Back to the before. But everything felt jumbled. Just like how my words jumbled when I wrote. I looked to Michael for help, but he avoided my stare.
2 years?
Ma, her hair wasn't as golden, had more grays than I'd ever seen. It was as if someone had swiped a gel filter in front of my face, and the whole room rearranged.
Buzz. This isn't happening,
I mumbled. Ma caressed my cheek.
Ms. Walker has been homeschooling you for the last year. We put you in dance class to try to ease you back into things. And Michael, he's been by your side since the very beginning. But maybe we pushed you a little too hard. We'll try again. 'Cause everyone, and I mean everyone, wants to see you get better.
I stared at Michael. He did seem older than I remembered. Taller. Thinner, more mature. Have I really been so blind?
Miss Valenti,
I hiccuped.
She knows about Monday. She
moved back to New York. Not long after it happened.
The room spun both ways.
It? What happened to Monday?
Ma shook her head, wiping her face dry.
No!
I screamed. The rug pulled from under me. I fell to the floor, hugging my legs. They're wrong. I know Monday better than I know myself. She loves crab chips and sweet tea, can do backflips, won the 5th grade spelling bee. And she can't be dead. She just can't.
Right? Come on, baby. Let's get you to bed. And in the morning, we'll talk some more.
I nodded. Too weak and confused to fight as one last thought hit me.
Does April know about me?
Yes, sweetie.
She knows.
May.
Can I tell you a secret? I knew she was dead. I just hoped she'd be in the trunk of a car, chopped up, and buried somewhere. Not in a freezer, hiding in plain sight. That aggravated the pain felt by anyone who ever laid eyes on her. Once red, she became a starless sky. An endless midnight. A hole in the universe swallowing up the world, leaving everyone blind. Onyx, ebony, jet black. A part of me was glad Monday wasn't named Friday. It would have been too tragic.
The before.
I wish my mom could be like Claudia's mom. Last night, Mom beat August until he couldn't get up. Said he deserved it. I thought he just passed out. But when Abel tried to move him, he wouldn't wake up. Abel tried to save him, but Mom stopped her. She made April put him in the freezer. I'm so scared. I want to tell someone. But what if they split us up like before? I may never see Claudia again. August is still in the freezer. I keep telling April we gotta tell somebody. But she's scared. She's trying to find Auntie Doris first, so we won't get split up. Everybody's talking about getting kicked out of Ed Burrow at the rec center. So we either gonna get split up again, if they find out about August, or we gonna be living on the streets like some bums. I almost told Claudia what happened to August today. At school, everyone was making fun of me and my hair. I messed it up bad. It's like five colors. Claudia said her mom can fix it, though. That's when I almost told her. I'm scared what she might do. What if she tells her mom or a teacher? Then everyone is gonna know. What are they gonna think of us? I shouldn't be writing all this. If Ma ever finds this book, she'll kill me. At his televised press conference, Tip Charles coughed out excuses, drenched with tears.
I didn't know. I just didn't know, he cried. I'd call, and she wouldn't let me talk to them. She wouldn't let me near them.
Not unless I gave her money. He broke down, and his surrounding family members comforted him. Monday's family. Where have they been all this time? Why weren't they looking for her, too?
Had to find out, with the rest of the world, that my children were gone on the TV. It ain't right. How could she do this to my babies?
Police questioned April, Little Tuesday, neighbors, and school officials. It didn't take long to put the puzzle together. August had been in that freezer for a year and a half. Monday, at least 10 months. Mrs. Charles wasn't home when they finally came to evict her. She wasn't there when the marshals peeked inside the awkwardly placed freezer sitting by the door and found two kids stuffed inside. She wasn't there when they ripped Tuesday out of April's arms as she pleaded. She wasn't there when a neighbor tipped officers off on her whereabouts. Mrs. Charles was down the street, next to Daryl's, calmly smoking a blunt, listening to the sirens come for her. A mountain of teddy bears grew outside Monday's door, spilling into the street. Hundreds of candles, burning throughout the day in the valley of flowers and rest in peace posters. Reporters stood in front of the basketball courts, combing through the tangled details of the story, as kids played 3-on-3. Buzz. Boy, I wish she could have been there to see the funeral. You would have seen the droves of people from the DMV line up outside Mount Holly. The police department surrounded the block, walling us in, and news vans turning the side streets into parking lots. You would have seen a standing room only church with TV cameras in the balconies, hundreds of white carnations and lilies flooding the pulpit, the old ladies in their high black hats, the gospel choir in their holiday robes, the mayor in the front row. You would have seen the puddles, no, oceans, of what Ma called crocodile tears from fellow classmates. The same ones that had cackled at her blonde hair, called her a hoe, then a lesbian. Shayla and Ashley, consoling each other, faces wet with snotty tears. Jacob Miller, sitting next to his brother with his head hung low. You would have seen the ushers in white gloves and charcoal dresses, walking around with boxes of tissues, handing out church fans and programs, with her middle name spelled wrong. You would have seen Daddy help carry in her coffin, along with some of her neighbors, dressed in dusty, mismatched suits and shoes that needed shining. Tip Charles was too distraught to carry nothing but himself to church, in a t-shirt with her face on the front, a picture from 4 years ago. Speaking of pictures, there weren't many. Monday's mom had none to share. Her dad had a few old blurry ones on his cheap flip phone. Tama gave them all the pictures she had. Almost 7 years of photos of us dancing, decorating Christmas trees, trick-or-treating. And they cut me out of every one. Like we never existed. In the program, I'm always a mysterious arm, linked with hers. Where was I during all this? The third row, in front of a pearl-pink coffin, with my best friend inside. August next to her, in an identical pearl-blue coffin. There were even less pictures of him. The Redskins players offered to pay for the entire funeral. Someone must have told them that pink was her favorite color. That someone wasn't me. Ma's arm draped around my shoulder. She wore a black wrap dress, church heels, and a frown on her face. She scoped out the attendees, measuring them, searching for something to pinpoint a memory or recollection until it finally dawned on her. None of these people knew Monday. I question if I really knew her either. Thank you all for coming, Pastor Duncan said at the pulpit. We are here to celebrate the life of Monday Cherry. Monday Cherie Charles and August Devante Charles. This homegoing is particularly painful. Children should not lose their life so young. But we as a people must trust in the Lord. I stared at the back of April's head in the front row, her hair in a high bun, Tuesday in her lap, with their Aunt Doris waving a fan beside them. I wanted to see her face, her expression, to know what she was thinking, feeling. Did she even feel at all? I looked up into the packed balcony, with the church cameras and audio replaced by CNN. Michael stood on the sidelines with hands behind his back. We locked eyes, and he nodded. Pastor read the welcome scripture, and the choir sang a hymn. After the eulogy, Pastor invited the congregation to speak in remembrance. Shayla and Ashley, linked arm in arm, were first to the mic. Monday was our friend at school, Shayla whimpered, looking straight into the camera. We're gonna miss her so much. Ashley broke down, crying harder than everyone combined. They boo-hooed before being escorted off stage by one of the ushers. More people went up to talk, none I recognized. Monday was an avid reader. She burned through our summer reading list, always willing to help put books away after reading time. That little girl there was my heart, always willing to help an old lady out. Monday and August took our swimming classes together during the summer. Nothing but smiles. You couldn't help but smile when you were around them. Miss Valenti trembled as she took the podium. Her face red, her eye makeup ruined. She gazed at the audience until she spotted me, giving me a half smile before she began. Monday was smart, witty, funny, wise beyond her years, and ever curious about life. One of my very best English students, and one of the most caring, protective friends you could ever have. I'd never met a girl so young, who loved so fiercely. It was an honor to be her mentor. Pastor finished his service, and the choir began another hymn. Jacob Miller stood, slowly walking over to put a single pink rose on her casket. Photos snapped like clockwork. Later on, his perfectly rehearsed teary face photo would be used for the cover of Time magazine. The choir sang in joyful praise, but all I could hear was buzzing. Buzz. Ma, confused by the theatrics, squeezed my shoulder.
Do you want to say something?
She whispered. I shook my head no. When you first wake up from a nightmare, you search for something to ground you, something to anchor you to reality. So each morning, after they found Monday, I stared out the window at the library, waiting for it to morph into a cave full of flesh-eating rodents. Only when it remained a clear box would I pull back the covers, step out of bed, and start a new day, with each step heavier than the last. My toothbrush weighed 1,000 pounds. My comb stung my scalp, and I found showers an unnecessary task. The smell of oatmeal made me want to vomit. Just the idea of school caused dread to swell up in my chest, and I'd sit on the bathroom floor until I had enough air to leave. I slept at all hours of the day. I'd wake up to watch the recurring news reports, showing the same picture of Monday that Tip Charles had on his t-shirt. My best friend, my other half, was dead. You were right. A voice inside me kept saying over and over again as I slumped down the stairs. But being right did not give me the satisfaction I had hoped for. One morning, I walked into the living room and clicked on the TV to the local news. Endless coverage on Monday's death, interviews with specialists and witnesses.
Sweet Pea, I think you've been watching too much TV,
Ma said.
It's not good for you.
I shrugged, changing the channel to CNN. They too were covering the story about the kids found inside a freezer.
How about some lunch?
Ma offered.
Maybe we could go to the movies later? Or maybe just take a walk?
What'd you say? I shook my head, pulling the red throw over every square inch of my body.
The body of Monday Charles is now being re-examined for possible sexual trauma after a witness came forward with allegations of abuse outside of her home.
Daddy stormed downstairs.
That's it!
He yanked the TV so hard it left holes in the walls, slamming it down on a pair of old speakers.
I've had enough!
A few weeks later, I found Ma in the kitchen, frying some pork chops, boiling collard greens, with a fresh tray of mac and cheese just out of the oven, and a pineapple upside-down cake in the travel case.
We're visiting in April today,
Ma announced with a guilty smile.
Her aunt called this morning. April asked about you.
News fans surrounded Aunt Doris's house like a pack of sleeping wolves. Their interest was piqued as we pulled into the driveway. I carried the cake while Ma balanced the trays. Aunt Doris greeted us on the porch steps, and we hurried inside just as a swarm of cameras descended.
Sorry about all that,
she said, shaking her head.
Someone tipped them off. Everyone's trying to suck some words out, knowing damn well they shouldn't be bothering these babies.
Inside felt like a dark cave, the blinds shut tight, except for a screen door leading to the sunny fenced-in backyard. And there was April, her back to the house, sitting in a green plastic chair in the middle of the lawn. We stared at her in silence, a breeze playing with her ponytail.
April's been having a hard time. Poor girl has been through it.
Aunt Doris had bags under her eyes bigger than my cheeks, black hair with graying roots. I could see some of Monday in the way she smiled. Ma inhaled through her lips, holding back tears.
Does she have any friends we could bring by here for her?
She asked.
Nah. Guess she just kept to herself.
Not that I blame her. She sighed, leading us over to the kitchen. I went and saw Tuesday yesterday at the hospital. She's asking about her mother and what time Monday is coming over to